Yelston, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome
to Utopia.
Everybody, welcome in. It is a weekend edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610. Hope you're having a great weekend. Texans had a great day yesterday as I record this on Sunday, obviously, as you can tell, late Sunday morning, around lunchtime. Just sort of a recap and some of my thoughts on yesterday's 28-10 win over the New York Giants. So let's get right into that. Before we do, a quick reminder to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. Season's almost here. It's time to click that subscribe button and add the Utopia Football Podcast to your universe of podcasts that you have. So I appreciate that. Appreciate everybody telling folks about it. Appreciate all of you who came up to the pregame show where Seth Payne and I do the pregame show. If you haven't been out there yet, we're right near the entrance where the blue lot kind of pours into the campus there, the grounds of the stadium right there by the Astrodome. We're on a big stage. We're hard to miss, but several of you coming up and saying you enjoy the podcast, both on audio and you like the YouTube stream. Love that, man. Pumps me up. So I appreciate that. Appreciate all the kind words and appreciate you guys spreading the word on the podcast. That's how we grow this thing. It's going to be a fun time for fellowship as Texan fans. So that was really good seeing everybody out there yesterday, braving the surface of the sun level temperatures that were out there. So thank you for that. If you were somebody who came by and said hello and said some kind words, I really appreciate that very, very much. So subscribe to the podcast if you could. Also, a quick reminder, houmailbag@gmail.com is the email address for the podcast. I do a mailbag every Tuesday, so be sure to get those in. Try to get them in by Monday. Usually by Monday, I kind of have the list of questions all vetted and ready to go. So I would imagine plenty of questions coming off this game against the New York Giants, where other than a flurry of Daniel Jones, largely irreplicable, low percentage back shoulder throws in the second quarter, it was pretty much, I won't say a perfect game for the Texans, as you'll find out here, because we'll do it four winners, four losers. That's kind of the format I do it in. Four winners for four things we liked, four things that need improvement or are in danger of getting cut or traded is how it works in the preseason. So there's plenty to work on for the Texans. It was far from perfect. Obviously, red zone was an issue for the first string offense. But let's start there. Let's start with winners. Four winners, four losers from yesterday's 28-10 win over the New York Giants. I'm putting C.J. Stroud number four. I count him down. So number four winner, C.J. Stroud. And I know that the offense didn't get into the end zone. Didn't like the play calling down there when they got in goal to go. I think it was first and goal at the seven. Did not like the two fades that they threw to Nico Collins and to Dalton Schultz. I just hate fades in the end zone. I think even with C.J. Stroud and with big guys like Schultz and Nico, for when you have that quarterback, it's so much more to me of a lower percentage play than letting him use the whole field. Having him throw it to a back spot and counting on somebody to go up and over a defender to make a catch where you've got the sideline operating as a second defensive back, that's the last thing you want to be doing with all these talented guys that you have, is creating situations where the boundary can be used to defend them. So use that space. Even down there at the goal line, I think there's ways to create openings for guys down there. So didn't like the play calling, but I thought CJ looked sharp. You know, he was 7 for 10, and his only three incompletions were down there in the red zone. The two fades that I just mentioned, and then the fourth down play that was knocked down by Dexter Lawrence. I don't know that play would have been completed even if it hadn't been knocked down. But CJ looked really good. I thought just throwing the ball between the 20s. I love the first down slant to Diggs. My favorite play was when they were backed up, the Texans, on their own 1 yard line, and CJ just dropped back and threw a dime to Dalton Schultz for about 25 yards. Like, it's not supposed to be that easy to get out of trouble when you're backed up like that. And they were backed up It's actually a good segue here. They were backed up there because Derek Stingley Jr. had an interception right before that. So we'll get to Stingley. But CJ, number four on four winners and four losers. Number three, winners. Yeah, CJ, number four, winner. Derek Stingley Jr., number three. Derek Stingley Jr. has been the best defensive player in camp for the Texans this year. And it's a crowded field. They've had a lot of guys defensively look really, really good. Nobody's looked as good as Stingley. And the play that you saw, really, he should have had two picks. The first Daniel Jones pass hit Stingley right in the chest, and it would have been a pick six probably. He made up for it. A Daniel Jones throw down the sidelines probably should have had a little more air underneath it. If you give Stingley a chance to make a play where he gets his hands on the ball, his hands are just as good as a really good wide receiver. And the play that he made, man, it was really, I thought it was emblematic. A lot of the plays he was making last year, once he got healthy in week 10 and he came back for the Texans, man, he had five picks in last season and a couple of them were gifts, but man, a couple of them were plays where you go, all right, there's like five guys in the league that can make that play. And Stingley's one of them. If he stays healthy this year, he's going to have a huge season. If he's healthy this year, he's going to start to get talked about in the same category in the league that other Texans, like Stroud was 20th in the NFL's top 100. You know, Danielle Hunter was up there on the list. He's going to start to get talked about like that. And I think if he has a year like he's able to have healthy, and I think the Sauce Gardner, Derek Stingley stuff goes away for good. I'm not saying that Stingley is 100% better than Sauce Gardner. I'm also not saying he's not better than Sauce Gardner, but I just think the whole argument as to who got it right, because after 2022, that was a big story. Sauce Gardner's first team All-Pro, Derek Stingley Jr., misses half the year with an injury. And so Nick Caserio was under a lot of heat. I think there is a bit of a redemption going on right now with that pick. But Stingley's got to stay healthy. So, but he looked amazing. That pick was really good. He had another tackle yesterday. Derek Stingley Jr., I declare him ready for week one of the regular season, as I declare C.J. Stroud ready for week one of the regular season. No need to see any more of these guys at all. And maybe even including that Rams practice coming up on Thursday. I honestly, like, I just bubble wrap these guys and get ready for Indianapolis in week one. So Stingley, number three. Number two, his draft classmate, Jalen Petrie. Stingley's coming into the year with a lot more buzz than Petrie in terms of just, okay, you know, this guy may be the truth. Petrie is a guy who's been able to stay on the field health-wise, and he's put up some numbers, tackling numbers, and in his rookie year, he had some interceptions. But he had a lot of missed tackles, too. And last season, this first season in this new defense for him, he did not adapt well to playing a deep safety role. I love the fact that they're playing him around the line of scrimmage now. They're playing him in that same role that he really thrived in at Baylor. Around the line of scrimmage. He was the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year, playing kind of a hybrid nickelback, undersized linebacker. And he has a linebacker's mentality, too. He likes to throw his body around. But Jalen Petrie, again, like Stingley, Stingley only had 14 snaps yesterday. He had three passes defended. Petrie only had 14 snaps. They were in there together with the first unit. And he had a couple of tackles, including a nice TFL tackle for loss, and then obviously the pick six to get the Texans on the board. After they had gone four downs, they turned it over on downs down deep in Giants territory. And that, unfortunately for Giant fans, that left Daniel Jones having to make decisions in his own end zone. And you saw how that ended. So Jalen Petrie, just right place, right time. But that's what he was in college. And I think this new role they have for him is going to allow him to be right place, right time a lot. Sometimes when you say right place, right time, it's an indicator that the guy was lucky to be there. Jalen Petrie historically has instincts for that kind of thing. He found himself last year in places where there were plays to be made. He was just over aggressive and missing tackles. And then the confusion on the back end where, you know, guys would be running wide open and it was because of coverage breakdowns, oftentimes tied to Jalen Petrie. It's been really good to see Petrie operate in this camp this year in this new role. And it gives them some roster flexibility, too. It means they don't necessarily have to keep a Desmond King or a Miles Bryant or somebody like that who's maybe more tailored to be a slot corner. If you've got Jalen Petrie playing your slot corner, assuming he can cover, then that almost frees up a roster spot in a way. And they're gonna need that. This is a deep Texans team, and we'll get talking in losers in a second about how deep some of these positions are. But actually, we'll get talking about it right here as we get to the number one winner from yesterday, and that would be John Metchie. John Metchie III, four winners. He's number one for me because John Metchie was teetering, at least in the eyes of a lot of the media like myself. His career as a Texan, at least, was kind of teetering on the brink over the last couple of weeks. John Metchie will be on a team somewhere in 2024, but the last couple of weeks have been rough for John Metchie, who all the reports on coming into camp were that he was looking more explosive. He was feeling the way he was, maybe even better than before he got cancer and had to beat cancer to get back on the field. And those things all checked out in the one-on-one drills and in throughout the beginning of camp. You can definitely tell Metchie looks different physically this year, just in terms of his explosiveness and the physical tools. There's a reason he was picked high in the second round. But for the last couple of weeks, in the two preseason games before this Giants game, he had one basically throwaway catch and then a drop in each of those games. And that had been indicative. You know, that was emblematic of what had been happening at practice. The few practices before the Hall of Fame game a couple weeks ago, he had some rough practices. And then reportedly in Ohio, those three practices up there, he was having a rough time catching the football up there. Metchie was outstanding yesterday. He was catching everything thrown to him. The only one he didn't catch was on Case Keenum's first snap of the game, the first snap of the second quarter on a third down, where Keenum kind of forced Metchie to spin his body around near the sideline. So I don't put that on Metchie. If he had come down with that, then that would have been something else. But he winds up with six catches for 68 yards, and it was great to see him get into the end zone for the first time as an NFL player, even if it was a preseason game. So John Metchie is number one. John Metchie last week coming out of that Steelers game, you looked, and boy, it seemed like all of the eight or nine other receivers on this depth chart had made a play at some point in either the Hall of Fame game or in the win over the Steelers. All of them had, except for John Metchie. So I think Mechie's going to get the benefit of the doubt when it comes to making this team. I think they view Metchie and what he's capable of. I think they view yesterday as the norm for him. And I think he's going to make the team in large part. Well, not in large part. In large part now, because it looks like he's got things going again. But I think also they're going to have to look if they want to keep all these guys, because there's eight or nine guys that 2 years ago, any of them, they all would have made the roster 2 years ago, you know, if they were in a battle, if there weren't eight or nine of them on the roster at the same time. They're like, the eighth guy on this depth chart is better than like the third guy, the David Culley and Lovie Smith years. Like, Chris Conley was on this team then. He stinks. And he was a starter. So they've got a lot of talent. I'm sure Nick Caserio is on the phone this week, seeing what teams need receivers and maybe get a day three pick for one of these guys. I don't think Metchie will be one of those guys now, though, but I think Metchie winds up one of two ways. He either does wind up traded, which I don't think is happening now, or two, he winds up on this roster because if they cut any of these guys, there's a much more likely chance that Metchie doesn't clear waivers, that somebody picks him up, and they would not be able to bring him back onto the practice squad. I think they might be able to sneak Xavier Hutchinson through or Ben Skowronek through. And, you know, Skowronek's a veteran, so I don't know if the same rules apply to him. I don't want to drag the podcast down with waiver rules and practice squad. Just know that they like all these guys. Nick Caserio has said that on my show on Sports Radio 610 with me and Seth Payne, that he's been saying it since the beginning of training camp. There are going to be good receivers on this team that get cut. Robert Woods is another one. So I think there's eight or nine guys that have a place in the NFL. It's just for two or three of them, it's not going to be Houston. I think as of right now, Metchie he's in. If this were like bracketology with the NCAA tournament, you know, he's like last four in. Whereas before, I think he might have been last four or first four out. All right, so those are the four winners. Let's get into the four losers here quickly. The first loser, just the general malaise over the first quarter of this football game, first quarter and change of this football game. The Texans were incredibly sloppy in this game. It just goes to show you how bad the Giants are. Like, the Texans could not have played sloppier in some respects in the first quarter of this football game. And yet they were winning this game. You know, they kind of led throughout in this game. So the penalties, though, were the big thing, just the penalties, the general overall sloppiness of the Texans. And I've got the game log in front of me here, but this all happened in the first like quarter and 2 minutes, like the first 17 minutes of the game. The Texans had, let's see, as I get my blurry eyes here on my screen. They had a false start on the very first play from Blake Fisher at left tackle, which I almost thought might have been an homage to Laremy Tunsil, he of the frequent false starts. I was expecting Blake Fisher after that false start to maybe like bump his chest with his fist and point over at Laremy and say, hey, that false start was for you, big fella. Because that's what Laremy does. When Laramie's not busy shutting down Myles Garrett, he's false starting a lot of times. There was a hold on a third and goal play from the six by Shaq Mason that didn't get enforced because it was offset by a Giants pass interference penalty because the guy couldn't cover Dalton Schultz in the end zone. Let's see. There was a too many men on the field penalty on a first and 10 by the defense. There was a hold on Brevin Jordan that nullified a huge chunk play to Tank Dell. This is all in the first quarter of the game. There was a delay of game on a punt, and not the intentional kind either, where they're like at the other team's 40 and they take a delay of game. This is a delay of game at their own 32-yard line. Like they couldn't get lined up to punt the ball. And then in the very beginning of the second quarter, Malik Fisher, number 79, lines up in the neutral zone on third and two and hands a first down to the New York Giants. So it was a sloppy, ugly first quarter from a penalty standpoint. So DeMeco Ryans will have plenty of film to go over with these guys when he pulls out the laser pointer. I don't know if he's a laser pointer guy or not, but he pulls out the laser pointer and decides, you know who I'm going to embarrass right now? Blake Fisher. Why are you jumping off sides? Why are you false starting? He's probably more of a positive reinforcement guy than I am. I would be busy embarrassing people and shaming them over it. D'Amico's probably a much more measured teacher when it comes to that stuff, but no shortage of material for DeMeco Ryans and the coaches to go to with the starters, by the way. Like, it's one thing if it's all the third stringers doing it, but there's teachable moments for guys who are going to probably be playing some important downs for this football team. Number three. So that's number four, first quarter sloppiness. Number three, and as long as we're talking about losers, this is a loser in the traditional sense here. Like, Giant fans, man, like Giant fans, I don't mean you're losers like you're a real loser. Like, I don't mean to make this personal. Some of you are losers. Some of you are Yankee fans. I mean, you cross over with Yankee fans. So it is what it is. But I would say, just from a standpoint of Daniel Jones as your quarterback, that sucks for you guys. He's terrible. He looks overwhelmed all the time. I don't mean in the pocket. I mean standing there on the sideline in society. He looks totally overwhelmed. He's got these big bug eyes. And I'm big on does my quarterback have a face where he makes me feel comfortable that good things are going to happen? Daniel Jones makes me feel like I'm going to get hit by a bus, and he's driving it. You know, he's driving the car, and we're going to get hit. We're going to get T-boned. Like, I wouldn't drive anywhere with Daniel Jones. I would feel we would for sure get T-boned. So yeah, he stinks, and he's overpaid. And if you've watched Hard Knocks, it probably doesn't make you feel any better about the guys making the decisions on Daniel Jones and this roster and Brian Daboll did a great job when he was coach of the year a couple of years ago. He did too good a job. He coached up Daniel Jones to where the only option evidently was to give him $160 million or $80 million guaranteed, however you choose to look at it. He sucks. They suck. Sucks for you guys. Your team is awful. That's number three. Number two. And now this is where we start to talk about the 53 coming into focus here, because the 53-man roster is going to get pared down on, I believe, August 27th. So that's the Tuesday after the Rams game next week. And there's going to be players that fall into one of two buckets when it comes to making decisions. They're either underperforming, and we'll get to that in a second, or they've been banged up and you can't get a beat on them, or even worse, you can't trust them to stay healthy. And that's why number two on my four losers list is Tegan Quatoriano, the tight end, who actually ironically scored the first touchdown of the preseason for the Texans in the Hall of Fame game, and who, when he's been on the field, looks like an NFL player. He looks good. The problem is he can't stay on the field. Literally just moments after scoring that touchdown, he's getting carted off the field. Now, it doesn't look like a season-ending injury or anything. It's a calf injury. It was feared to be something worse than that. The problem for Tegan Quatoriano, again, is the depth of this roster. He's at a position where there's three guys that are, barring injury, three guys that are going to make this team. Dalton Schultz, Cade Stover, and Brevin Jordan. They're all on this team. and Teagan Quatoriano hasn't been able to get in the field and prove anything. So that's already a position where keeping more than three is a coin flip. You know, some teams do keep four if they feel it's a deep enough position. The problem for Quatoriano is that this is a team that's debating, I would imagine, whether to keep seven wide receivers or keep four tailbacks, you know, to go along with a fullback, that they're going to keep a fullback on this team. So Texans teams of the past probably could afford to keep four tight ends because they're not, you know, defensive tackle. That's a position where I would think they normally keep four, maybe five guys. There's six guys that they probably want to keep at defensive tackle right now. So that's the one. There's probably a few guys that I could point to in the same vein as Quatoriano, but his position is so locked up ahead of him right now. You know, whereas I think running back, there's only one lock right now, and it's Joe Mixon is on this team, and he's the week one starter at running back, at tailback. That's it. Everything else is up for grabs. Similarly, with wide receiver, I think we know who the three guys are, Diggs, Dell, Collins, and then it's totally up for grabs after that. Quatoriano's at a position right now where it's locked in. You play with one, maybe two on the field at the most, and you're locked in with three guys right now. So, and now granted, Brevin Jordan is a different cat when it comes to tight ends. He's more of a hybrid pass catching package. You know, they got like a small package of plays for Brevin Jordan, but I think they love that package of plays for Brevin Jordan, you know? So Quatoriano is kind of representative of that group of play. Like Noah Brown right now, like Noah Brown is missing a ton of important time. And I know they like Noah Brown when he's healthy. And I know he had two monster games last year in the middle of the season when they needed it most. But he's hurt all the time. So that's what I'm looking at right now. Teagan Quatoriano, number two. And again, let's get to number one. And I think this is number one on this part of the list. I hate to call it four losers because he's one of the nicest human beings in the world. He was a great player his rookie year. He definitely has a future in the NFL. He's proven he can play in the NFL. But I don't know that I think I'm kind of done burning daylight on Damian Pierce carries. And I hate to say it because I really like Damian a lot, man. Really like him a lot. There is nothing more I would have liked to have seen in these first two games. And Damian planting that foot, finding a hole, cutting up field, and then running over guys in the secondary. We've seen none of that. We've seen 8 carries for 9 yards. It's not all his fault, but there's nothing about how he's running stylistically that tells me that even if it was well blocked, that or averagely blocked, you know, if these plays were blocked good enough to actually get 4 or 5 yards on an average play, that Damian's the guy who can go get that. And now Damian is in a similar situation to what Mechie was in that I just described a week ago, where you're not only struggling, but every other guy on the depth chart is making plays in games. Every other guy on the depth chart, other than Mixon, who didn't play, made a play yesterday. Cam Akers had the one play where he ran left, cut back right to daylight, and Cam Akers has looked a million times more comfortable in this offense than Damian Pierce. Jawar Jordan had 4 catches for 42 yards yesterday, and they were giving him a good long look at the end of the game. J.J. Taylor had a long run that got – it probably would have been about a 40-yard run, except it got called back because he stepped out of bounds. By the way, how about big number 94 on the Giants running down J.J. Taylor? I would imagine that's something that he gets dogged about in film, even though it didn't count because he stepped out of bounds. Man, number 94 was picking him up and putting him down because Taylor's not a slow dude. And then British Brooks, undrafted free agent, scores 2 touchdowns and looks way more acclimated to what the Texans are doing, finding holes, running over guys. His second touchdown where he got to the edge and then he turned it upfield, showed some speed, and he's a hoss. He's 5'11", 220, something like that. So that, and Dari Ogunbowale, he's sort of the wild card in all this. You know, he scored a touchdown in the Steeler game. He plays special teams. We saw him as an emergency kicker last year. So you got to wonder, you know, Dare probably has a spot on this team somewhere. So Damian Pierce is in trouble, I think, right now. And I think if there's anybody that Nick Caserio is calling around, kind of putting on the, putting him out there for teams to see if they want him. Because I think Damian is a good NFL. There's a good NFL player in there somewhere because we've seen it. I just don't think it's happening here. And now he looks like he's in his own head. To me, the most disturbing play from Pierce on Saturday was the kickoff return that he had where he got to the massive humanity there at around the 30-yard line and just slowed down and almost stopped. You know, it's just, man, it's hard to see because we love Dameon Pierce. It's hard to believe. Like, he was the guy. Dameon was the guy after 2022 that was on the front of the season ticket graphics, you know, before they drafted Stroud and Will Anderson, obviously. Like, in February and March, where they're starting to fish around to season ticket holders, one of which I'm married to, and they start sending out all the, you know, all the collateral material to get you to re-up for your tickets. And they got like nine players on there, you know, kind of in like a triangle shape. And they've got one guy standing at the tip of the arrow right there. Tip of the arrow was Dameon Pierce, you know, with guys like Petrie on his left and Stingley on his right. And then one layer back further was Kenyon Green and Laremy Tunsil and on and on and on. It was Dameon. And now I don't know if he's going to be on the team this year. To me, at this point, the only thing that keeps him on the team is that Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans clearly like the guy. And they're rooting for him. And he's been getting all the reps with the ones. But, man, you got a running game to – you got to fix the running game here. They're not operating with a running game right now that was operating at optimal efficiency last year. I mean, you got to fix this thing. And so, man, like right now, this would be like a team of people needing to fix a car and then bringing me in to do some of the heavy lifting. I suck at fixing anything. I don't – we have a toolbox that my father-in-law bought me for Christmas like 4 years ago. And I don't even open the thing because I get anxiety looking at all the tools. I don't know how to do anything. It kind of feels like that's what Dameon Pierce is right now running in this offense. I hate to say it because I really do like the guy. But so there you go. There's your four winners and four losers. So big thanks to Anthony Irwin, my producer, who I think jumped on in the middle of this podcast and started firing up these graphics. So I appreciate that very, very much, Anthony. I know you're not on stage. You're not in the chat, so to speak, now, but just know that I appreciate you. Big shout out to you. Quick reminder as well to subscribe, rate, review the podcast. I remind you at the beginning and I remind you at the end to tell a friend about it. And this is kind of the format for how I do things. Once the practices are all done, the training camp practices, where I've been doing recaps of those, then we're going to get on a pretty fixed schedule of Mailbag Tuesday, game preview late in the week. And then I usually do my podcast post game right after the game's over on Sunday so that you guys have it either Sunday night or Monday morning. So you can listen to that, you know, at work while you're playing hooky, you know, that kind of thing, acting like you're working, but you're listening to the Utopia. So we'll wrap things up here. Hey, another quick reminder, HOUmailbag@gmail.com, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. is where you can send the emails. I am done. I am off to finish up my weekend in style doing nothing. So we'll see you tomorrow, 6 a.m. Or if you're listening to this on Monday, we'll see you on Monday throughout the day on Sports Radio 610, reacting to the Texans game and all kinds of stuff. Appreciate all of you tuning in. This has been the Utopia Football Podcast. Let's get going.